Let's talk about history or her story and the difference between them. History is a very iffy topic. As people say, the winner rewrites history, and you can find that history has been written all the time. And every time a political party changes in the saddle of politics, elected or otherwise, they seem to want to see themselves on top of the list and want themselves to be proclaimed as heroes of whatever they do or did. So you can see that very evidently and clearly in the pharaonic history, where you can see that the cartouche, the previous pharaohs, would be chopped away when somebody else came up later, literally defacing those people who came before them. So in that sense, history is never real. As somebody said, history and astronomy are both improvable. There's no witness of that part of history that historians write and describe, and there's no explorer who can describe what the astronomers are finding for faraway stars. They can infer it, they can interpret it, and they can attribute meaning to it. But when you look at the history of history, it is evident that history has been rewritten and continues to be rewritten, and that in that sense history is basically just politics in a different kind of format, and it's also not very much different from journalism in a different kind of format. In journalism, people often know that what is described is not true. The people who were at an event would have different memories of it than what the journalists describe of it. And especially when you have situations like in the United States of America, when in the 1930s the bankers decided that they could control public opinion better by buying over the newspapers. So they bought up about 25, 30 of them and had an editor sit on the board, and they discovered that the editor did not have to change much more than 3% of the news, leaving it away or putting something in or changing it, and as a result the story would be different. People would have a totally different understanding of it. Just leave away the word "not" and everything goes into its polar opposite. There is this documentary that you can find of the researchers who for Fox News were reporting on the bovine growth hormone and all the diseases that come out of it. At the moment that they were ready to publish that, Monsanto came in and said that this had to be stopped, and so they couldn't fire the guys, and then they had them rewrite the story 87 times. So, but if that happens just for one story on one topic which is debated or debatable, then how for the rest of humanity and history of humanity, which is debated and debatable? It is evident that now we are looking at the history of the past in a different way. It becomes more and more clear that this history of slavery started in Europe, and it is only slowly that people are realizing that the main slavers were Jews, Jewish ships, Jewish owners. And still you're not supposed to talk about that, and Jews owned newspapers will certainly try to eliminate that. But then the Jewish owned newspapers do that, the Christian or Catholic owned newspapers do that, the Muslim owned newspapers do that, so everybody is distorting the story. But if there is already a distorted story, then there will be a distorted history. History, of course, is a kind of collective myth which gives meaning and importance to everything that's going on. And in fact, one of the things which history often does and which politics often does is try to get rid of history. And so, for example, if you look at the way that the popes have described the history of Jesus, arguably if that is a true story, yes or no, had just read Joseph Atwill about the writing and the rewriting of the New Testament. And there's this Dr. Day, who actually also writes about who rewrote the Bible. So is the Bible history, or is it a redacted and edited record for political purposes and means? Is it information turned into disinformation? There are very good points to doubt the Bible, and as a result, every book in history. I once ran into a very interesting book about a South African secret intelligence officer who took an interest in the Bible. So, well, actually, the paw prints of my colleagues can be found all over the book, because he knew how, in his job, rewriting the news and rewriting history, or writing history, is part of the job. And if you look in 1984, Orwell's story about Newspeak and the rewriting of history, there you can see how crucial the rewriting of history was for that political regime, but in fact it holds for any political regime. So yes, you can look at history, but then do remember that there are no witnesses from the past, so it's all hearsay. Realize that everybody has been clobbering everybody over the head and then started to rewrite history, so that from one regime to the next, the story of history would be turned around. And for that reason, there is also part of the history that is omitted, like the people involved in the role of slavery. As I mentioned, you only need to distort about 3% of the story, and the story is already no longer valid. So what can we do with history? Evidently, you need to make up your own mind, as always, and you need to really understand that history is not factual, for the simple reason that if you would believe that the stories in newspapers, and I actually spell it newspapers, like what you knew, K-N-E-W, newspapers, is that what people knew and what has been written down, but it is always written down for a specific purpose. The position where the news is in the newspaper has a specific purpose. It's news which is really important and relevant can be hidden somewhere on seemingly the wrong page, but actually they can then say that yes, we published it, but they don't let you know that they published it amongst the obituaries, or amidst advertising, or next to a story which is not plausible. So there are lots of ways that you can contextualize information, and the information is still there, but your brain, your mind, will not pick it up in the way you actually can read it. So the rewriting and the writing of history is a dubious affair, if you just want to use that word for it. You just can't know, you don't know. So what is your history? What is your family history? Just start there. How much do you know from the history of your own family? Which were the people involved? What were they doing? Why were they doing it? Why were they doing it there? Who did they meet? Why did they meet and mate specific people? Was that for political gain? Was that for financial gain? Was that because the neighbors or the church said so? Or was that because they actually had a deep recognition at the soul level and wanted to explore and discover something in their lives together? Just in your own family history, there are already so many questions that you can ask. And if you look further on, how much do you know of your history? And how correct is that? There are some families who are very explicit about how important and how long-standing their history is. Take, for example, the King or Queen of England, and how glorious their history is. But if you go back a couple of generations, that you find that actually it's not one family, but they replaced one family by another. They're actually not British at all. It's not Windsor, but Sachsen-Goldberg-Gotha. So they're Germans, and at some point you see that all of these so-called kings of Europe, they're just one family. Queen Victoria and all her nephews all over the place. Go back a bit further and you see that many of them are family relationships, and then you find kings surrounded by counts and barons and dukes and all that. But when you look at who became a duke or who became a count, the so-called nobility of Europe, you'd normally find somebody standing on a heap of skulls. That there was this one guy who said, well, okay, now I'm going to be the leader of this all. And there were a couple of, could you call them hoodlums, gang members, who then clobbered the rest, killed a lot, and then were thanked by getting the title of nobility. And so why is it that from then on everybody pays for them through taxes? What is this whole relationship between leadership, let's say politics, and history? And why are the history books often so explicit on mainly or merely who was the next ruler of the land in one place of the or the other? And if you look at history from that perspective, then you can see that there is a full arbitrariness of who runs a country for a moment in time and who takes over the corner shop. One time I was in Versailles, I was looking on the wall at this lineage of Plantagenet, and I was sort of comparing it to, okay, here you have a family who say that they run the shop of France, and a bit further down the street you have a family who's been running their greengrocery shop on the street corner for a couple of generations. If you look at the relationships that are involved, then you see that history needs to be extended with a lot of stories which are not part of history. Yes, there's a kind of mathematics in what the roles of power are. Actually, in science you would use that in the term of physics, because the change of power and the flow of power is something which physics describes. So why is history not connected to physics and the principle of physics? If the principle of physics are universal, why are they not seen in history? And if you can't describe physics and the universal law using mathematics, where's the mathematics of politics? There is something that needs to be addressed in history, the study of history, which goes way beyond simply describing that somebody said that something happened in some place for whoever knows what reason. And when a reason is given, you always have to ask, well, what did the other party say? So in that sense, you can never disconnect history from the legal system. What's right and what's wrong? what's the rule and who rules, who makes the rules? And then you see that politics and the legal system are closely connected to the system of belief. And you can then find that church and state actually keep each other in power, that the politics involved is very similar, but that they tend to use story writing, have the control of the media, as part of their political power. So they always use the mass, the money, the microphone, and the media, including history, as the instruments by which to manipulate public opinion. That means that history is part of this understanding of how people relate to each other, how people form relationships, how they form groups, how they form humanity. But there is no history of humanity. I grew up in the Netherlands, and then the school teacher had the history lesson about the English wars, while my colleagues in England were learning about the Dutch wars. And the same how the wars between England and France, or the wars between France and England. But it is only when you start to look behind the scenes, and in one of the books of Harari, the one with the title Sapiens, which addresses the development of humans, you can see that you cannot actually understand history if you do not understand the financial control. The French Revolution followed in the wake of the Pacific Islands speculation boom and bust. So as a result of this speculation in France, in around the court, you didn't understand why the monies had certainly gone, and how the normal control system, which operates through money, no longer functioned. So then you suddenly see that you shouldn't understand history, you should understand the control of money. So is it history? Is it the family business? Is it a religious business? Is it a political business? Well, actually, maybe it's just a banking business. So then the question, of course, becomes, why don't you learn in school how to make your own money? And in making your own money, do your own business. And in having your business, learn how to act and interact with other people, which is, say, the applied form of politics. And in working with people, come to a mutual appreciation and understanding, mutual support, which actually the applied form of religion. So let's put history in that larger perspective, and then first of all, we cannot believe any of the stories of history, no matter what the conformation is. I once went into the British Library and asked them to change the labeling system. I said, well, have the alabaster statue 11 inches high found there and there, Mesopotamia, for example. So I asked them to describe why that statue was important for the people who made it, and why it was considered to be important, so that it was actually displayed in the museum. And then it came back, well, we have this categorization system and we cannot change that. And that's a bit what also happens in history. They describe the facts, as an alabaster statue, 11 inches high. They might say where they found it, but they don't say why they put it in the text, why was another story omitted and this story put in its place. With that understanding, do look at history. It is fascinating to look at history. There are very good stories about what happened in the past, and there are very good descriptions of how things came to be in the past. But it is necessary to strip away the religious manipulation, the political manipulation, the financial manipulation, and then come to an understanding of how did that actually help people in humanity. For example, there are very interesting documentaries which show that in the 1945s, 50s, the first ET contacts became explicit, and that so unhinged the understanding of the government in the United States that, as Bill Cooper said, you cannot understand the politics in the United States of America if you do not realize the impact of this hidden contact with these extraterrestrials, which nobody was informed about. So there are many more hidden factors in history which people will react to and respond to, but when small groups respond pretending that they can act on behalf of everybody, there is a great difficulty, because political representation is by definition political misrepresentation, and historical representation is as a result also most often historical misrepresentation. So in studying history, which is fascinating, you can learn a lot from it, and you can, as the Chinese say, you can learn to avoid a lot of problems as a result of understanding history, you still have to realize that those are just stories, edited, redacted, changed, perverted. So what can you learn from it? And specifically, how can it help you to make better choices in your life, so that from the choices that you make now, you can create a better future? Essentially, that was the whole purpose of history, not to look back. When you're driving a car, you don't keep on looking in the back mirror to see how beautiful the landscape was, but you look in the past if there is anything that comes up from the past that might overtake you and that you may need to take into account. The whole universe is based on processes. The world of nature on Earth is based on processes. Humanity in its interaction is based on processes. Alchemy and astrology helped to understand these dynamics of these kind of processes, so that using astrology you could timeline things and see how these processes connect up to each other, might overtake each other, might seemingly repress or suppress each other for a while. And that, from that perspective, you can see that we are dancing in this dance of Shiva, of an ongoing dynamic of changing processes. But the question is, with that understanding, can you come to a better positioning of yourself? Can you see that what is happening from a larger perspective, that you are not myopically blinded by just seeing what's going on at that time around you, but can you see how from different perspectives, from different cultures, from different timelines, all kinds of things are bubbling in the pot and coming together, and like waves on the ocean, might create a wave that you can surf on. And then history becomes very fascinating, because you can actually guide your surfboard and speed up some processes of development in time and history by understanding how timeline processes connect. And you can see that specifically in the body, where all kind of processes come together, and together, when they're well attuned, they form health. But when the processes lose contact or connectivity, you can have disease, and the so-called chronic disease is actually an achronic disease, that one of the processes got disconnected from the others and the timelines no longer merge. A separation took place, and those kind of diseases that take place in the body also take place in humanity. And then history is like a diagnostic of the health and well-being, or the changing of state of mind or state of body of humanity. And that, of course, can be very instructive. I'll leave it at this for now, because there's so much more that you can look into once you understand history, and once you understand that you actually need to reread and rewrite everything that was rewritten in history. Just to give an example, the historical revisionism, which is now taking place, is where people are understanding that the description of what happened in Nazi Germany is actually probably quite different from what made it into the press, and that the press had a specific political agenda, but by interviewing the people who lived there and by reading the notes of what actually took place, a totally different story emerged. So in that sense, when you study history, do practice the art and skill of history revisionism, and unedit the political bias which has been imposed on history by the so-called winners, and as a result clarify your view that you can use history to look at the perspective from all parties involved. You need to go to a balanced legal view. It's not just that the one wins and the other loses. No, what were they trying to do, and why did it work or not work at that time? And then history is like a tool for healing the quality of your own life, but also the quality of the life of humanity.